This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
PTB Wrestling Network. Welcome back to your home for everything modern day wrestling. Place to Be Nation's main event. I am your tri-host, Scott Criscolo, episode 153. I keep asking my partners here what number we're on. And right now we are exactly 400 episodes apart between main event and Place to Be podcast. So all I have to do is think of subtract 400 from the last episode JR and I did, and that's the number for main event. So it is episode 153, and we got a busy show this week because it's actually a moderately busy weekend in professional wrestling. It was busy in the Far East this past weekend, which we will discuss, and then two big shows this weekend. Not only does WWE have a pay-per-view Sunday night, but Impact has one Saturday night, which we'll talk about. And then in the B block, we will discuss, as it is our newest segment of the GWCW Classic Match Pick. I had the shoo, and instead of doing a match, I did a feud and let my gentlemen kind of go their own way and see what they can find. And we have a lot of great stuff to talk about in terms of that. So stay tuned for that after the break, after the reads. Let me bring in my team tonight. This gentleman wearing number 53, because we don't know who wore 53 with his high school team, even though we all know they wore great colors. He is the purveyor of the Kings of Sport Patreon, the Godfather, Nate Milton. Do you remember who number 53 was?
Some anonymous lineman. But the bigger question, the bigger question, Scotty, is are we going to be able to purchase 53 jerseys for your Washington Red Tails / Red Wolves / Generals / anything not racist?
So one of the you know what my favorite part is? One of the names on that list was Radskins.
Yes.
Which I thought would have been tremendous. The Radskins. Oops. All I said, you know what I said about that was my favorite one, by the way, in all seriousness, my favorite one on the list. Did you guys see the list? That there's a lawyer. Well, let me bring in my other, let's bring in the rest of the team, of course. He is the conscience of Place to Be Nation. He is wearing his Artis Gilmore jersey. Huh? Although he can't grow his hair like Artis Gilmore, he wishes. Mr. Steve Willie.
Artis Gilmore has the best avatar on NBA playgrounds because he is like 7 feet tall and his afro is in full effect. So it almost literally pops off the screen.
Oh,
I mean, I thought Artis, Gilmore was a slam dunk like Chocolate Thunder, Daryl Dawkins. But yes. Thanks for having me.
Now you're going too far, Steve. You're going up a Cliff Levingston here.
Oh, Cliff Levingston, yes. Oh, that's fantastic.
Cliff, I have Cliff Levingston's autograph, and I'm not sure which autograph is worth more, that one or the ball I have of Sandy Koufax and number 53, Don Drysdale. So I probably Cliff Levingston worth more. It's on its rookie card, so it's probably like $1.50.
Other great 53s for those in the tri-state area here, like Dr. G and Mr. D'Amato and Mr. Atherton, the diehard Giant fans, legendary and tremendous Giant linebacker Harry Carson was number 53. And for you Bronco fans out there, I don't know if there are any, legendary and pretty damn good linebacker Randy Gratishar, number 53 also. I think he was definitely on the team in 77 that lost to the Cowboys in Super Bowl 12. I don't know if he was still playing when they made it back and lost to Harry Carson's Giants in Super Bowl 21. I don't know if he had retired by then. But anyway, I can't believe we have like the holy trinity of awesome 53s. Cliff Levingston, Artis Gilmore, what was the third one? Oh, crap. Steve, what was the third one? Artis Gilmore, Cliff
Darryl
Levingston,
Darryl,
and Chocolate Thunder. And Chocolate Thunder.
Yes.
Chocolate Thunder was the first. And you know what the best part about next to World Be Free and who was the guy that used to play for the Sonics? They were like the coolest players because they played with their chains on. like their gold chains. Anytime you saw an NBA player in the late 70s, early 80s wearing a gold chain, you knew they were badass. And Artis Gilmore did. Chocolate Thunder did. Gus Williams. Thank you. Gus Williams. He wasn't number 53, though. I think he wore like – he was a guard, so he wore like 7 or 9 or something. But he used to play in wearing his gold chain. It was pretty badass. I always thought that was cool when I was a kid. Anyway, gentlemen, it's good to have you. Love having you here. I love being together. Busy weekend. I mean, I feel like it's good that we're actually going to talk about like actual wrestling cards tonight, because I feel like we went down a very depressing rabbit hole in our last episode. But great talk, and we got a lot of good positive feedback and a ton of downloads. So thank you for your support. The episode 2 weeks ago was different, not easy to talk about, but we thank you for your support. We're going to have fun tonight. We promise. We're going to have a good time tonight. Before we get into stuff that has happened, let's get into stuff that just happened. New Japan Pro Wrestling this past weekend did have their Dominion shows. And we had some surprises. I know Mr. Campbell wasn't thrilled when I talked to him. I'm looking forward to hearing Mr. Willie and his opinion. Opinion of Dominion. The first big show for New Japan Pro Wrestling. You watched it all. You didn't watch it live, Steve, right? You watched it after the fact.
There was 1.5% of me that thought, "Oh, this goes on at 1 a.m. Why don't I just stay up and watch the whole thing?" And then I realized I'm a middle-aged man. And as much as I don't want to admit it, that would probably be a horrible idea. So I luckily for the first time avoided spoilers and watched it that evening. I skipped the first couple matches because they're kind of pointless. And then watched the important matches.
Right.
Not the best show, but I also understand that they're in a very similar situation to WWE and AEW, and that they have a really super depleted roster because it's only locals. Right. They don't have any of the Americans. They don't have any of the Australians. They just have Zack Sabre Jr. who lives in Japan. So, there are a lot of people that were thrust into positions that they probably shouldn't have been in. I'm looking at you, Yujiro Takahashi, and your pimp juice match with Okada coming up.
Yes. So there were 7. Did you watch any? Did you get to catch any of it, Nate? Or were you like me that went totally blind?
I haven't seen a minute of it.
Yeah. Hey, no. That's why we have an eclectic crew here, so we can try to watch everything.
That is true. Not easy. We do the best we can. Thank you, Steve, for being able to watch it. The crowd at the Osaka Joe Hall was 3,898. Of course, things in Japan are actually pretty damn good. I wish they were good here. But they got 3,898. But the Osaka Joe Hall is moderately big, so I think they were able to spread out, I think. So
yeah, I think it holds like around 10,000.
Yeah, so they spread out.
And I want to say, because I've heard some negative comments on the crowd, I thought they were incredible. They, first of all, it should be a message to like Americans who don't want to take, at least some precautions. Like there's 3,800 people. Everyone are wearing masks. And the rules were that they could not yell and scream. And to the point where this is like a national thing. I think Disney Japan, it might have been, or maybe Universal Studios Japan opened, and there's a rule, please don't scream on the roller coasters, scream within your heart. And it's just like a different culture, because they clapped. And, the best example I had was, where they yay, boo with the punches that just, it's kind of overrated at this point or is just getting old. So they would just clap, clap, clap. Clap, clap. It was like on the spot doing pretty original things. For comebacks, they would clap louder than they would if it was like, hey, that was a nice move. I thought they were really fun, and it was a different experience watching wrestling like that, especially after going through 3 months or 4 months of empty arena shows where it's nothing.
Here is the here are the final results, and then we'll get into Steve's analysis. The first match, Steve said the first few were, it was a, as usual with New Japan. If you don't have a guy in a feud, throw him in a multi-tag. Mm-hmm. So we had three six-man tags. So we had 6, 12, 18 guys wrestle in the first three matches. we had Satoshi Kojima, Yuji Nagata, and Ryusuke Taguchi defeated Great Bash Heel, which is Tomoki Honma and Togi Makabe. Yes, I'm doing very well, Steve, so don't, none of your snickering over
hey,
there.
Hey, you're out of practice. It's okay.
Yeah, that's true. And Gabriel Kidd. Watch, I'll blow that name. By submission, that match was 9:25. What'd you think of that one?
It was okay. It's just a standard opener. Right. Gabriel Kidd is, I believe, Australian. He's one of the Young Lions.
Isn't that, what's his name, Justin Gabriel? Or am I thinking of somebody else?
No. He's just Justin Gabriel's PJ Black in Ring of Honor.
PJ Black, that's it.
It's just a dude. Just a dude in training. So it's just a basic opener for that. Nothing to see.
The second match, also a tag, a six-man tag. We have Los Ignorables, Yayapon, Sanada, Hironu Takahashi, and Bushi, taking on Chaos, Tomohiro Ishii, and Toriano, and Yota Tsuji, and L.I.J. won by submission in 10:15. Same thing, standard fare?
A little bit. I mean, the big story coming out of the night before was that Evil defeated Okada in the New Japan Cup and then joined Bullet Club, which going into that match was the saddest little faction with all of the people in Australia. Because the Bullet Club, the whole point of it was that it was like these foreigners coming in and forming a stable. So your Bullet Club going into this match of those who were there were Takahashi, Taji Ishimori, who's a great junior heavyweight, and then Gato and Jado. Like the bookers,
right?
And no one else. It was like the saddest stable of all time. it's like the B team if you had a manager with them. Ugh. So Evil joined, which they basically had dropped some hints that he was turning heel. During the New Japan Cup itself, he was cheating quite a bit. And Los Ingobernables are kind of a betweener team anyway. But he, even in the semis against his tag team partner, were like doing low blows and stuff behind the referee's back. So he knew something was up. And
right.
So the point of this match was more, how are the rest of Los Ingobernables reacting? And Takahashi, super emotional. Sanada, kind of stoic. Bushi, you really can't tell one way or the other. He's masked, and I don't know if isn't the best at showing emotion. So this was just kind of, again, a standard six-man match. That was a little switch in that. It's like, okay, how are the rest of the guys going to react to this turn? You know, turns don't happen that much in New Japan. It's not like they don't generally have these big angles where people swap sides.
Right.
It's not like Lacey Evans, you know, switching sides based on like karaoke.
And we're going to talk about Evil in a moment. Next up, another six-man tag. Suzuki Gun, Yoshinobu Kanemaru, El Desperado, and Dookie? I'm just saying Dookie, Steve.
I'm just saying Dookie.
That's all I'm saying.
Okay,
it's just Dookie.
Just,
I did it all for the Nookie. Defeated Hiroyoshi Tenzan, Master Wado. Master Wado, wasn't he the one that owned Anakin's mom? Oh, that's Wado. And Yuya Yamura in a six-man tag in 9:44. Anything on that, Steve? No?
Yes. There's one thing. Master Wado is a former young boy who just came back. And during the New Japan Cup, there were these little videos like coming soon, wait to the Grandmaster, Master Watto, he's coming. And so he comes out during the semifinals. And so hold on one second. I'm just trying to get his name. Hirai Kawato. He's got like blue hair. And, you know, I was listening to Post Wrestling and Waiting caught the same thing I did. His pants were like, if 1998 Hardy Boys, like, were shopping at Goodwill.
Well, they were. That's where they got those checkered pants. But
okay, what is the lower like? What is
what's worse than checkered pants?
Yeah, what is the Walmart of Goodwill?
Yeah,
the Walmart.
It was like, yeah, like this. It was just bad. Like, he was supposed to be a martial artist, and the guy is like, seems to be okay, but it just looked really bad. It looks like they didn't put any thought into it at all. So he is aligned with some of the legends right now who are taking them under his wing. So that's really the only thing you need to know, is that he was kind of embarrassing and a former young boy.
Okay.
I did it all for the Dookie. The Dookie.
Okay, I guess I'm going to have to play Limp somewhere in the show tonight.
You don't have to.
No, I don't have to. Not at all. In a tag. I know this isn't WrestleMania 17 or 19, so... In our next match, Bullet Club, Takahashi and Ishimori with Gedo defeated Chaos. So my man Okada and Haruki Goto took the loss in 9:42. I feel like these matches, Steve, seem very like throwaway. Was it all about the last three matches?
Very much so. Goto took the fall.
Seem very New Japanish, or is it? No, it doesn't seem like their kind of thing.
Yeah, it was. Again, it was an interesting show, and I do think, like, a Dominion usually is more like a SummerSlam, and they just, again, didn't have the roster to put together, like, 5-6 great matches. But these next two are barn burners.
Yes. We have Shingo Takagi and Sho for the Never Open Weight title, and Takagi retains the title in 2007, Steve.
Possibly the match of the last month since they restarted New Japan. Maybe only short of their other match they had a couple weeks ago. This is a match to go out of your way and see. This is the third match they've had in a series this year. They were tied 1-1. They didn't meet in the New Japan Cup. Sho won that one. Sho is always, he's like with Roppongi 3K, Sho and Yo. They were the Tempura Boys on in Ring of Honor for a hot moment when they were on excursion. And Sho has always been seen as the one with the highest upside. And unfortunately for his partner, his partner tore his ACL in the New Japan Cup. So he's out for a year. And then Sho is going to get this singles push out of it. And at some point he was going to get it anyway. It's just kind of unfortunate that this is the way it came about. But yeah, this match was great. It was super hard hitting. Really fun. Takagi out of Dragon Gate's been in New Japan for a year or two. And just a great match.
And this is a belt that I never really took. I never really paid much attention to. But
no, the belt means nothing. The match was just great.
Yeah, the match is great. The IWGP tag team titles were on the line. Your champions were Golden Ace, Tanahashi, and Ibushi. And they lose to the Dangerous Techers, Taichi and Zack Sabre Jr. So my man Zack Sabre, who I thought was going to win the G1 like 3 years ago or 2 years ago, is now one half of the IWGP tag team champions. The match was 28:43. Sounds pretty good.
Yeah, a little long. Not as great as I thought it would be, but the finish was so awesome. Tanahashi does like a lot of dragon screw leg whips, and basically Taichi held Hiroshi Tanahashi in a standing position, and Zack Sabre Jr. did 6 dragon screw leg whips, 3 to each leg in different positions. And with Taichi holding him up, it looked like his knee was being broken. It was just really cool. I've never seen it before. And then they Taka Michinoku gifted Zack Sabre Jr. the Michinoku driver. So they call it the Zack driver now. And it's like this super dangerous move he never uses. But if, and it's funny because it's a Michinoku driver. You see that in like AEW or WWE, like every show. It's not like a big move anymore, but this is like murder, death, kill. The makeshift team of Tanahashi and Ibushi is gone, or at least beaten. The tag team division is looking up because they're taking this approach now where they're tagging up singles guys who are good together. And these guys are in the same faction, so it's not like it's all of a sudden like tag team partners that hate each other versus like the same two tag teams like Gorillaz of Destiny and Evil Sonata changing the title nonstop over 2 years. So different looks, which I appreciate.
Yeah, and I always feel like the tag division, what are your thoughts on this, Nate? The tag division in New Japan over the last like 4 or 5 years, I feel like, I mean, other than, the Juice team and maybe one other, I feel like the tag division is like the John Cena, Shawn Michaels thing, where I always feel like two singles guys are slapped together and they're usually the tag team champions. Maybe that's something New Japan needs to start fixing. Maybe now during the stretch where they can do it under the radar is maybe really establish a legit tag division. Because I feel like it's sort of there, but not really.
Well, yeah, especially when you talk about having all those multi-man matches. Like, there's tag teams to be found within all of those six-man or eight-man matches. And, yeah, you're right. Like, for the past 4 or 5 years, maybe even longer than that, it's been, you know, that John Cena, Shawn Michaels, or even more accurate, you know, the Golden Lovers situation. Mm-hmm. Which was great, and then they told some great stories. But yeah, this is a time for all sports, wrestling included, to kind of play around with things. You know, this is kind of silly season. You know, baseball is talking about the robot umpires. You know, the NBA is doing some different things in the bubble. So why not? Like, why not see if you can, build up some new teams? And if it doesn't work, you know, we'll act like it never happened. You know, we'll have Okada just wake up and come out of the shower like your man Bobby Ewing, and it was all a dream. Like 2020 was just a dream. It was all Okada got drunk one night, had too much sake after the match, and this whole past year in New Japan was all in his head, like that poor little boy in the hospital, Steve, was it St. Elsewhere?
Yes.
This was all just Okada. And everything in New Japan in 2020 was a snow globe in Okada's mind.
And he should go back to being champion and being just damn awesome. That one. I was kind of surprised at that one.
Ibushi wakes up and he thinks he's sleeping with Tanahashi, but he opens his eyes and it's actually Omega. And it turns out he's on New Heart all along.
Oh God, that's awesome. Okay, so the main event, which I think is a monumental upset here, Tetsu Naito, Tetsu Two Belts, defending both the heavyweight and intercontinental titles against Evil. I thought this was a throwaway match. You know what this match reminds me of when I was a kid? Slaughter and Warrior. I thought this was just a bump in the road for Warrior to get to like a Hogan rematch at WrestleMania 7. And I thought this was a bump in the road for Naito to defend both belts and then move on to somebody more important. But no, in 3801, Evil, Mom, Dad, don't, it's Evil, is your new IWGP Intercontinental and Heavyweight Champion, WTF Steve Aloysius Willie. What is going on here?
No, my wife's grandfather's named Aloysius.
I knew that too. No, sure. I didn't actually.
Okay. First off, just get this out of the way. Nate, when we review the TNA pay-per-views, you often say there's a great, hour, 20-minute show in this 2-hour show. There's a good 25-minute match in this 38-minute match. This was really long. Naito can go 38 minutes. Evil's not ready for 38 minutes. And this match had my two least favorite things about New Japan. The first, whenever the Bullet Club is involved, there's a million run-ins, and it's so done. It's just like, we're over it. And to lead to that, there's always a ref bump. In the final three matches, there is at least one ref bump. And there's it's just like such an old trope that it's almost like, okay, when's it coming at this point? So those are my big knocks on the match. I realize again, you know, that they're in a bind, and you know, Gato once before, when they lost Omega, they changed plans. It was like they were going to go to Omega, and they basically took out Omega because he left and put Jay White in that position. And right. I have no information on this at all. I'm not some, you know, I'm not Meltzer, but it feels like this wasn't intended for evil at this point. Like maybe Jay White was supposed to win, or Kenta was going to win the cup and then take on Naito. But because they are not around, okay, evil had been rumored to go and leave LIJ for a while. It made sense with the story they were telling the last couple weeks. And once you do the turn, like if he lost, what would be the point when you do the turn the night before? It was interesting. The match was not, well, I'm on a cage match right now and Meltzer's ratings aren't out, but like Shingo and Sho got 8.75 out of 10 based on like the voters who write in. The tag team match was 8.49. This match was, and we're talking 136 votes here, 5.82. So, I mean, if you go on a five scale, you know, a Meltzer scale, that would be like 2.75, 2.75, which is not a New Japan, you know, main event match at a big show.
Right.
So it just, I get what they were doing. I wish they could have done it in a different way. I don't mind him being champion, but just like you said, Nate, like this is the time to do different stuff. They've been mixing up the juniors with the heavyweights to varying degrees of success. There's been people that they've raised up the card in positives. Like, I mean, Evil like could be up in that. You know, Sho moving up is good. Takahashi, Hiromu is going to be Evil's next challenger. He was like the MVP, in my opinion, of the cup. But then you also have your Master Wado and Gato and Jado, who are like in their 50s and can't even take a bump, walk into the ring. And so they're in an interesting spot. I was disappointed by the show. I'm intrigued to see what's going to happen going forward. You would think that Australia, which has been doing pretty well with the pandemic, I know there's like a little uptick. I was surprised that like those guys aren't back at this point. Maybe they will be soon. Bullet Club, once everyone comes back, is going to be really bloated. It's going to have like 10 guys in it. So yeah, we'll see. I'm not, my like hot take, because I don't follow wrestling Twitter anymore, I feel that they should have brought some of the guys back that they had on an excursion. And entered them into the mix, and just instead of doing like their 2 years overseas, now's not the time for that. They had some guys, a couple guys who were young lions that were super over and could probably like what was it, Shooter Umino, who was Dean Moxley, like or John Moxley's Dean Moxley, John Moxley's kind of a little sidekick when Moxley was over for the G1. That dude was super over wearing his Moxley shirt and like being Moxley's tag team partner. I wish they would have done something like that so you could clear up some of the grossness in the bottom of the card. And we'll see. I don't think this is going to move mountains. I don't think Evil is going to be the champion all the way through Wrestle Kingdom. I thought Naito did pretty good, all things with Stanley. He didn't goof around like he usually does. As he was walking to the ring, he looked like he saw a ghost instead of being cocky and confident. So there were little things that were really good about the match. It was just like 15 minutes too long, too ref bumpy, too much interference. I don't know what else to say. You need to see it because it's an important part of New Japan. But if you're just going based on work weight, the only ones you need to see are the Shingo Sho match and the tag team title match.
I have to be honest with you. I didn't realize Evil was that young. He's 33. I thought he was older. Mm. He seemed older to me. Well, that's why I said to you, I had said to you offline, I said, oh, is this like a retirement tour for Evil? He gets like a token world title. Because I thought he was in his 40s. I didn't realize he was only 33. Wow.
Well, I thought you meant when you said that, because Kairi Sane is rumored to be leaving, and they're married. Mm. They just got married in the last year, and I'm like, oh, maybe you think like he's retiring too. But like he does look older, but to put in perspective, Royal Rumble... Not Royal Rumble, SummerSlam, the one that we, the Ring of Honor show that we went to.
Yes, oh yeah, yep.
In Brooklyn at the first Brooklyn SummerSlam, he was a young boy during that.
That's crazy.
Yeah, that's not too long ago.
That's nuts. Yeah, he just looked younger, looked older to me. So I was like, oh, is he retiring? And you probably thought, what the fuck is he talking about? So, why do you think Naito lost? I mean, he's had the belt, what, 7 months? Think that was just long enough?
Honestly, I think it's just, this is just my opinion. I feel like with Gato always being big on long-term booking, that maybe Naito was going to lose at Dominion anyway, because he went on the 4th of January or the 5th of January. So that's a six-month reign. Mm. However, four of those months, they didn't have anything. So I think this was only his second defense, if I can remember right. So it feels like the reign ended up being really short because he only really wrestled for 2 months. And, you know, we probably would have seen a lot, you know, more of different things. Maybe Evil would have turned earlier and Naito would have beaten him then. And then, you know, then Kenta, like he was scheduled to have a match. Like the anniversary show, they usually have the junior title holder against the heavyweight champion. So that would have been his partner Hiromu against him. And I wonder if Gato just is like, hey, this was the plan to change the title at Dominion. And then you move into the G1 and then work your whatever you're going to at next year's Wrestle Kingdom and just stuck by it. Maybe it was supposed to be Evil. I don't think it would have been. But that's just where we're at. That's just my guess, kind of seeing where he's been going the last few years. I like throwing the curveball. It was just a 38-minute match that shouldn't have been 38 minutes. This isn't the feud that we're talking about in the second half of the show. We're not talking about those guys doing 38-minute matches.
No. I was taken aback by that as well. I don't know if that's just a trope of... A trope of New Japan that the main event has to be, you know, 3 zillion minutes long. This isn't Kenny and Okada.
Yes, that's a great comparison because that was a match that, you know, was 60 minutes, 70 minutes. They had the 40-minute one. Those are matches that don't seem like they're going that long. This was a match, a main event of the second biggest card of the year where I checked my phone a number of times.
Really? Yeah. Yeah. Where do you put Evil compared to like the rest of the roster, Steve? In terms of ability.
He looks great. He's like kind of thick like Rhino. So a little bit different than the rest of the roster. He feels like if I'm even looking at the roster right now and I'm thinking these are the guys that stick out, I'm thinking Okada, Naito, Ibushi, Tanahashi, like Shingo sticks out a bunch. Master Wato just sticks out because of his terrible hair and his Goodwill pants. But he's like in that next tier. To use an overused statement from wrestling, like a B plus B type guy. But you know, this elevates him. It elevates him quick. You know, they did this with Okada, right? He came back from his excursion and from TNA, and they gave him the belt immediately. They did it to Jay White. They gave him the belt and, you know, elevated him immediately. So I don't know. The crowd was shocked, but then you'd also, they were only clapping. So you could hear a pin drop after he won.
for the right or wrong reasons. I think that's what it comes down to.
Exactly.
All right, so there's Dominion. You can check it out on New Japan Pro Wrestling World. It's all there. So what's next? They're doing the G1 in what, like October? Is that what their plan was?
Because of the non-existent Olympics, they are doing it then. So they have like, and of course it's not up on the site that I'm at. They have the next bigger, kind of like in your house type show is Sengoku Lord in Nagoya. That is in a couple weeks, and they're going to have Evil versus Hiromu Takahashi for the belt. Evil's obviously going to win that one, because I don't think you're going to just give it to the junior title holder in 2 weeks.
Right.
That's just a small card, but it seems like they're going to do it with people in attendance again. Oh, Okada's going to be against Yujiro too, which is a match I never thought I would say. Yujiro getting a big singles match.
That is pretty funny. So that's what I think. I think that they'll let that linger for a little bit and give Evil a chance to run with it till they figure out what to do next. How do you think? Who is the guy that will probably take it off him? Will he hold it till Kingdom? What number are we up to? 15?
I hope not. I can't imagine that would happen. Man, I'm trying to go up and down the roster at this point.
Okada?
I just love
giving that reason. But
you know, there's always been the talk of Sonata taking the step up, and they were former tag team partners. Ibushi, I feel, still deserves it at some point.
You too.
I wish they give Minoru Suzuki a run.
Kenta?
Maybe a blessing in disguise, I guess, with Evil, is that anybody's in play now, Steve.
Right.
Like anybody with a legitimate argument to be made, you can put them in that title picture.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I agree with that too. Okay, we've talked about the past. Let us talk about the future. And we have two shows to discuss this weekend. We'll begin Saturday night as Impact Wrestling presents the 16th Slammiversary. Believe that? Or is it the 16th? Yeah, 16th Slammiversary. It'll take place somewhere. It'll probably be back at the Skyway Studios where everything else has been. I can't believe Slammiversary has gone on since 2005. Most of the main events were King of the Mountains, as I'm looking through the list. Let's see. AJ won it in 05. Christian Cage won it in 06. AJ won it again in 07. Joe won it in 08. Mick Foley won it in 09. I always forget that he was actually TNA champion. Did you guys remember if he was TNA champion? I certainly did not remember that he was TNA champion. Right? Did you remember, Nate? I remember him in TNA, but I don't remember him as champion. Though.
It's probably a short-lived reign.
I would think so. I'm sure it was only, probably a couple weeks. In 2010, the main event was actually RVD Sting for the world title. In 2011, it was Kurt versus Jarrett to become number one contender for the world title and the gold medal. I don't know who won these matches. I'm just saying who's in them. Okay. I thought they won them. Let me do that again. In 05, it was AJ who was champion. Let me say it that way. AJ, Abyss, Monty Brown, Raven, and Sean Waltman. In 06, it was Christian Cage, Abyss, Jeff Jarrett, Ron Killings, and Sting. In 07, it was AJ, Chris Harris, Christian, Kurt Angle, and Joe in a King of the Mountain match for a vacant world title. In 08, it was Joe who was champion, Booker, Christian Cage, Rhino, and Robert Roode, and Kevin Nash was guest enforcer. and then he popped his quad getting in the ring. In 09, it was another King of the Mountain. It was Foley who was champion, so this is probably when it ended. AJ, Jarrett, Kurt, and Samoa Joe. In 2010, it was RVD versus Sting. In 2011, the main event was Angle and Jarrett to become number one contender. 2012, it was Bobby Roode and Sting for the world title. 2013 was Bully Ray and Sting in a no-holds-barred match. I remember that one because I was covering TNA for our message board. 2014, it was Eric Young, Lashley, and Austin Aries in a three-way cage match. 2015, it was back to the King of the Mountain. Jeff Jarrett, Eric Young, Matt Hardy, Bobby Roode, and Drew Galloway in a TNA King of the Mountain championship. It was its own belt. In 2016, it was Galloway versus Lashley. Hey, didn't we just... Why is that match fresh in our minds? In a tap-out or knockout match for the world title. At Slammiversary 15 in 2017, it was Lashley versus Alberto El Patron. You know, that guy. It, title versus title. 2018, it was Austin Aries versus Moose. And then last year, it was Sami Callihan versus Tessa. No title there. So there were your main events for all the Slammiversaries back in the day. Let's talk about this card. Now, of course, the big problem we have here, well, not big problem, but obviously the big thing is that a lot of a few Impact wrestlers have gone, including the sitting, defending TNA World Heavyweight Champion or Impact Wrestling World Heavyweight Champion, Tessa Blanchard. We all talked about her not having a job, and we won't get into that because we talked about it on past shows. So we all know that the storyline going on at that moment was with Moose carrying the old TNA title, which I like that belt. And he was saying he was the true TNA world champion while Tessa was the actual TNA world champion, Impact world champion. Well, of course, Tessa's gone. So the Impact world championship is in abeyance. And there is a match, a fatal four-way Saturday night to determine the new champion. You would think that, you know, since there's not two champions, the whole Moose carrying an old belt thing would be kind of dumb. And they would just put him in this match and kind of start over and maybe make him champion or whatever. Nope! Because we don't need... Because even though the actual Impact World Champion is vacant, fuck it. Let's still have a fake champion. Yeah, why not? Oh, Jesus.
And then put him against who?
Yeah, this new up-and-comer on the scene. This makes no sense.
Yeah.
I mean, think about it, guys. If you're having a storyline, it's like, you know, Razor and Shawn in 94 and Punk and Cena in 2012? No, 2011. Because he left after Money in the Bank and then they did the tournament and both of them had two belts. But you're talking about two guys with two belts. The whole storyline was Moose saying he was the true world champion carrying the old TNA world title, which actually I like that belt. And then you have Tessa, who's the actual Impact world champion. Well, now that there isn't an actual Impact world champion, what is the logical thinking of having a fake world champion when you don't have a real one? You're not booking Nate. You're not, man. You got to knock on that door, brother. You got to fix this.
Here's how you fix it, Scotty. And I don't want to give TNA any ideas or Impact any ideas pro bono, because I'm not a generous person like Steve Willie. Steve will offer Don Callis counseling on the house.
Yeah. Man, what am I doing? What am I doing with my life?
Hey, you got to do this through the Patreon. That's what you got to do.
Yes, I'll offer booking classes through the Patreon. But here's the only way I think it works, Scotty. Okay. Is if the mystery man in the title match ends up being Monty Brown. Monty Brown wins, and then we go on the next 3-4 months setting up a Moose-Monty Brown world title match.
I love Monty Brown.
Yeah.
I love that. That's
the only way it works, because I think, like, yeah, you're right. The logic doesn't make any sense. The only way it makes sense is if you have somebody big enough that it warrants Moose still being on the outside.
Trey. Now, I love Trey. I love the Rascals.
Yes.
But that's not a place you can go.
Yeah, like the Mystery Man can't be Ken Shamrock. God bless him. Like, that doesn't warrant Moose walking around with this fake belt. Like, it's got to be somebody with a splash. Maybe EC3, but I'm still going with my Monty Brown theory. I think that works better.
You might be right. You might be right on that one. I think it could be EC3. I think it could be Rusev, although he's having a COVID issue, so we don't know if that's the case. Nah, I think it's still pretty safe to say that when he's able to, I think Rusev's going to AEW because he knows he'll get the money. All right, so we'll start from the bottom. Moose will defend the unsanctioned TNA World Heavyweight Championship. I'm so glad we're doing unsanctioned title matches. Against Tommy Dreamer, the up-and-comer. Yeah.
Why?
Yeah, I don't know what to make of that one. I mean, Tommy. Jesus. Tommy is 49. Come on, man.
Ugh. Like the value of Tommy Dreamer at this point is a promo, and the promo doesn't work quite as well with no crowd or with the limited crowd.
Exactly. Yeah, I don't know what the deal is. I don't know what's going on here. It's an old school rules match.
I don't even know what that means.
Is that like?
I honestly don't. Is it supposed to be like an ECW match, or like, is it like the 1950s and it's going to be catch as catch can? Like,
yeah, how old is old school? Are we getting a Lee West, gotcha, Stanislaus Sabisco?
I mean, Greco-Roman.
Yeah, exactly. Jesse and the Greco-Roman knuckle lock. I'm just going to assume Moose keeps his fake belt and we move on.
Right.
Yeah.
Tag team title matches on the line. The North, who've had the belt for Jesus knows how long, taking on Kenny, Shammy, and Shammy and Sammy. That should be the name of the team. I want a T-shirt that says Shammy and Sammy. Ken Shamrock, former rivals, now team. Ken Shamrock and Sammy Callahan. I think this might be the team that finally upends the North. What do you think, Steve?
Sure. I mean, the North has had a huge run, but you know, Sammy is still pretty over, and a big name, and North have kind of been cowardly heels throughout a lot of the COVID part, so they're you know, even though Sammy Callahan and Ken Shamrock is not my idea of a dream team, like they're playing it up a little bit, they very well could be, because you know, there's not much of a tag division here as well at this point.
What do you think, Nate?
Yeah, I agree. I think we get new champs. The North have been really good. But I kind of like this weird teaming of Shamrock and Sammy. And to continue the theme of ECW analogs that we've already established so far, I think this reminds me of when Terry Funk kind of passed the torch to Tommy Dreamer and gave Tommy his blessing. this is like Shamrock is the old crazy veteran and Callahan is like the new modern day violent dude. So I like the teaming.
I do too. I think it'd be a fun match. That might be one of the more fun matches of the night. All right, we have a Gauntlet for the Gold match to determine the number one contender for the women's title, the Knockouts title. Alicia Edwards, Havoc, Kira Hogan, Kimberly, Kylie Rae, Nevaeh, Madison Rain, Rosemary, Susie, Tasha Steeles, and Taya Valkyrie. I like my girl Tasha Steeles because she was in NWA, so I like her. I do love Rosemary. Madison Rain, of course, a veteran. Taya Valkyrie, former champion. There are a lot of pretty impressive women in this match in terms of that can conceivably win. Alicia Edwards, isn't that that's Eddie's wife, I think.
Yeah.
We like Havoc. She's impressive. I've been a big Kira Hogan fan for a while in Impact. There's a lot of possible opportunities here. Steve.
Yeah.
Top line women in this match, up and down. Who do you like? I want to hear your guys before I pick mine.
Well, it depends what you mean by who do I like.
We know that there's one person in particular that is the apple of Steve Willie's eye.
Well, you know, if you're going to have a gauntlet, you want a nice even number, like 11. That's a good number to have in a match. That's the thing of the match like this. It all depends on what order they put it in. Mm. And, geez, this is a lot of people. I'm going to, geez, they didn't have, what's her name? The old pirate princess, Katarina. Isn't she been around too?
She pops in from time to time, but, yeah. But like, again, like I think you said it last episode, Steve, like the Impact Women's Division, like the Knockouts, like they have just rebuilt themselves over the past year. Mm-hmm. And like they're on par with any women's division, you know, in the sport right now.
Yeah, I'm going to. So I'm trying to think of who I believe will win the women's match. And I, you know, I actually thought about this yesterday quite a bit, and now I'm completely revamping my thoughts. I think it's going to be a face. Mm. And is Havoc a face at this point?
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah, I'll pick Jessica Havoc.
I like that pick a lot, Steve. I'm picking up what you're putting down because, yeah, I had to reverse engineer my prediction because it depends on who you think is going to win between Jordynne Grace and Deonna Purrazzo. And with all due respect to Thick Mama Pump, as she calls herself, I think Purrazzo is going to win the title. So it wouldn't make sense for, you know, Taya or Kiera Hogan, as much as I love Kiera Hogan, to win the number one contenders match. So we're looking at the faces in here. So we're looking at Havoc. We're looking at your girl, Kylie Rae. We're looking at Nevaeh, I guess, Susie. I don't know what Havoc and Nevaeh are at this point. Susie, I think, would be a fun matchup, but I still think she's got stuff to do with Rosemary and Taya. So, to me, it comes down to Havoc or Kylie. And I'm like, what would make the most interesting matchup? And I think, because I think either one would be good. But I think just for the contrast of characters, I'm going to go with Steve Willie's girl here and say Kylie Rae pulls the upset.
Swoon.
I am going to go with Taya Valkyrie. Because I think Jordynne Grace is keeping the title. So I think we're going to get a rematch down the line. So I like Taya to win. Unless she loses and comes to WWE because that's where her husband is. But we don't go by that. We don't play by those rules anymore. The X Division Championship is on the line. My favorite guy. Love him to death. Loved him in NWA, and I love him now. Willie Mack taking on Chris Bay with Johnny Swinger. I want Willie Mack to win every match ever in the history of ever because he's just so awesome. I was so impressed with him in NWA, and I've said it over and over here on the show, guys. And I've said it on the weekly show with Dr. G. I love Willie Mack. I think he's a great wrestler. You know, for a guy that you don't think is a great wrestler, he works his ass off in the ring. And if you think of the history of the X Division title, this is not exactly the guy you think of to be an X Division champion. And yeah, I think he's done a fine job. I think he retains it here, Nate.
Yeah, I think this match has the potential to steal the show just because obviously Willie Mack is great. But then when you look at somebody like Chris Bay, I think Chris Bay has all the potential in the world. So I could see a situation where you put the title on Bay, but I think it's still just a little bit too early for him. So I'm going to go with Willie Mack retains.
All right, Steve.
Yeah, Chris Bay is the future, and he's been around not for for just a hot minute. He's been around for a few months, and Willie Mack still has quite a bit to go with this reign, I believe. He hasn't even been champ for that long at this point. Really just since the last – he won it at Rebellion, correct? And the two show – one of those two episodes. Yep. So, yeah, Willie Mack, I could see – Chris Bay being the X Division champ 6 months, a year, And
yeah, because I think what I do, Steve, again, giving these guys free booking, is I would have, once we figure out who our world champion is.
Yep.
And
I think we're on the same page again
here. I'd have Willie Mack cash in option C.
Option C. Yep. I was just saying the same thing.
That way you kind of clear the lane for the other X Division guys. And I think Chris Bay kind of gets his coronation at Bound for Glory.
Mm-hmm. Man, if Michael Elgin wasn't just such a dirtbag, alleged dirtbag. Can you call someone a dirtbag? I mean, it wasn't such.
Even if he's a legend. I think Michael Elgin's an asshole to begin with, but that's just me. Regardless of whatever happened, that would
be a heck of a match, Willie Mack versus Michael Elgin.
Yes, yeah. That'd be just that's a bludgeon fest right there.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Michael.
Yeah, thanks, Michael. Dick. I like Willie Mack to retain just because I think he's awesome. And yes, he beat Ace Austin on night one of Rebellion to win the title. So, and in our main, I don't know why my screen didn't change. Oh, there we go. And in our main event. The actual Impact world title is vacant. So we have a Fatal 4-Way, Ace Austin, the former X Division champion that Willie Mack beat, Eddie Edwards, Trey, and TBA. Now, the TBA could be anybody. Does Tommy Dreamer win the fake belt and then Nick shows up and wins the real one?
How about Tommy Dreamer wins the fake belt and then comes up as the TBA and wins both
real belts?
And finally, the young man.
Chris Bay or the future.
Yes. Instead of the boyhood dream come true, it's the middle-aged dream come true. Yeah.
The midlife crisis has ended.
50-year-old Tommy Dreamer has finally done it.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that's the assumption that he's going to live to 100.
Well, 49, I had to check. I don't want to age this man prematurely. 49-year-old Tommy Dreamer who looks like he's 55.
Yes.
Well, what was the line in Men in Black 3 when Will Smith's talking to young Tommy Lee Jones? He's like, oh, you're only 30? You got a lot of city miles on you. Dreamer has all the city miles on him.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah. A lot of tanks filled.
8 years of ECW.
Yeah, that'll age you.
Big time. Big time. All right, let's go around the horn. Steve, who is the TBA and who wins?
Good God. It's the world's biggest mystery. I give them credit for taking advantage of all the people that were laid off and creating a lot of mystery, because there really is a lot of choices here. The problem with that is if you're going to make it the, you know, probably favorite to win the title, it better be a big name. And the only one I can think of that would be a big name in Impact terms would be EC3. But it, like, to me, it wouldn't be what I would do. It, like, any of these names that are coming in doesn't move the needle. Even if it's someone like Heath Slater.
Right.
Like, it doesn't, it not only doesn't move the needle, but it doesn't fit in with what they've been doing the last year and a half, 2 years, which is recreate their brand on a lot of, like, indie talent that they've made their own. I mean, if you just look at this card, Ace Austin, Trey, Jordan Grace, really, you know, in some aspects, Willie Mack, you know, giving Chris Bay his first televised appearance, you know, not appearance, but, you know, showcase. Mm-hmm. Like, if you go down this roster, there are a lot of people that they've invested time in. And, like, man, Luke Gallows or Carl Anderson, I know that they've signed, but world champion Carl Anderson doesn't really, world champion Eric Young, that doesn't do it for me, you know.
Right.
Not in 2020. So I'm guessing it's going to be EC3.
Yeah, that's a good guess, Steve. I think like obviously my sentimental pick would be Monty Brown if they were able to swing that. I think that'd be cool. But I wouldn't mind EC3. The problem with EC3, though, is in an era where you don't have real fans at the building, I think EC3's return would fall flat. Because when you think about it, like that would be a really good moment if there were an actual crowd, because this is the guy who started with the WWE. They didn't use him right. He came to Impact, made his name, cashed that in to go back to the WWE. Spoiler alert, they didn't use him right again, and so he's kind of coming back to the place where he made his name. So, like, that could be a cool moment if you had actual fans who knew the history of this guy, but you're going to have, like, people that work there. Like, you know, Bob from accounting is not going to convey the proper emotion for the moment, but I do think, like, when you talk about Steve, like, somebody big enough, like, Eric Young, again, if there were a crowd, might be a nice sentimental surprise, but I think EC3 out of all those names is probably the biggest and also the one that makes sense for here's Impact.
Here's the person I don't want it to be. Bully Ray.
Yeah.
Speaking of 49-year-olds.
Yeah, not Bully Ray.
He was the champ. Was he a world champion?
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought
so. 2013, yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, he was really good in 2013. We're now 7 years past that.
Not yes. so much.
And his couple appearances in Ring of Honor, his couple feuds, actually brought the people he was against down. Mm. And I now I'm convincing myself that he's going to show up in some fashion, like with like Gallows and Anderson or something like that, because they've been teasing aces and eights for a while. I'm already mad at Impact, and they haven't even done it. I am totally wrestling Twitter. I'm like prematurely getting bad at a company based on my own dumb booking.
I'm going to tell. Okay, here's what I would do, Steve. If I bring Monty in, Monty's winning the belt. But if I bring EC3 in, I think you could have him win the belt. But maybe the better story would be, out of all these guys, the guy that we're overlooking is Eddie Edwards.
Yep, mm-hmm. I agree.
Maybe Eddie wins the belt even with whoever the big surprise is, and that sets up Moose versus Eddie. Which, and if you go back in storyline, like, they were friends until Moose started leering it, having those lustful eyes, as Randy Savage would say, for Eddie Edwards' wife.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, yeah, I think now the more that we talk this out, Steve, the more, if it's not going to be Monty Brown, I want Eddie Edwards to win. So that way we set up Eddie and Moose, and then Moose wins, and then we can have Willie Mack use option C on Moose, and then Chris Bay can win the X Division title, and everything's set. That's the rest of 2020 booking done for you, Impact. You're welcome.
Could have sold it on Patreon. No pro bonos in the Milton world, but you did it there. Nate, I'm very impressed.
You're welcome, Scott D'Amore.
And Impact, Scott, yeah.
Hey, wait, you knob.
$5 gets you in.
$5 gets you in. $500 gets you Steve Willie booking New Japan. $5,000 gets you Nate Milton booking Impact. $50,000 gets all of us getting our eyes gouged out with this next show. So, all right. So there's Slammiversary. I think you have to buy it on pay-per-view. I don't think it's streaming on Impact Plus. They'll probably put it up in a couple days after. I don't think it'll be streaming. All right. So to wrap up this, as expected, lengthy and well thought out A block, we go to Sunday night at the Performance Center for the official title of the show, The Horror Show at Extreme Rules. It's not even fucking October, and it's The Horror Show, which seems to be WWE as a whole right now. the Horror Show at Extreme Rules.
At least they have a sense of humor.
Yes, they do. Six matches. All but four of the two are for titles, and one of them is for an organ. Imagine having, like, Steve, I challenge you to a gallbladder match. Nate Milton, I challenge you to a duodenum match. Wait, do we have duodenums?
What? No, we don't, do we? What is this card?
I know. What is duodenum? Is that that's the thing in the back of your throat, right? Shit, now I don't even know. Fuck. I'm going to give Nate and I extra organs.
The uvula? Are you talking about the uvula?
Let's make sure Steve and I have a let's make sure Nate and I have a duodenum. Oh, we do. It's the top of your intestines. Okay, good. Yeah. I was thinking of something.
Yeah, you're thinking of the uvula.
I don't have that. And neither does Nate. But if you want to know whether he does or not, 5,000 on Patreon. No, I'm only kidding. No. All right, so the Performance Center, here we go. We begin with the United States Championship. Your champion, Apollo Crews, who I'm very happy about, finally getting some cred, taking on MVP, former United States champion. Of course, we have a new belt, which I've noticed over the last several years. You guys know I'm a belt junkie. I own five of them. That belts take a while for me to – there's not belts I immediately like anymore. They're not like the NWA World TV title or the Lex Luger U.S. title. Like belts like that I loved the minute I saw them. The last few years of WWE belts took me some time. I actually warmed up to the Intercontinental belt after a little bit. And this U.S. title I'll probably like eventually. You know what it's missing? I don't know if you guys are looking at a picture of it. You know what it's missing? There needs to be blue at the top where the stars are. I feel like it's very empty at the top. Like it's all gold and there's white stars. I think there should be some blue up there, and then I think I would like it. But anyway, that's just me being my typical belt nerd. I love MVP. I'm happy he's back with the company, Nate, but I think Apollo Crews retains.
Oh, yeah. Apollo retains, and like MVP, Asuka, and Sasha and Bayley have been holding this company up for the last 2 months, it seems.
Pretty much. Yeah, that is true. And we'll get to them in a little bit because they're an integral part of the show because they may have the best matches of the night. What do you think, Steve?
I think Apollo Crews here. There are six matches announced. I can't get over this. Like, are there supposed to be more announced on Friday on SmackDown? Because I'm looking at last year's Extreme Rules, and there were 13 matches. Now, I'm not going to ask for 13 matches on any show, but six? I don't see any of these going very long either.
Oh, Steve Willie. How naive, Steve Willie. Sweet summer child. These aren't just six regular matches. They're going to be six, except for maybe MVP and Apollo Crews. I'm betting that the bulk of these matches are going to be damn cinematic matches.
Oh, God. Well, I think, we know at least two of them will be, and they'll be spread out. Let's talk about the next one. We'll wait for the eyeball one. We'll do that one last. Here's the Wyatt Swamp Fight. This is not for the title. Braun Strowman, the Universal Champion, taking on Bray Wyatt. This is not for the Universal title. This is a non-title match. The Wyatt Swamp Fight, which makes me think, in terms of the landscape, it's going to look a lot like the Boneyard Brawl, except not good. but I could see, like, you know, backwoods shacks and that kind of jazz, and maybe we finally get a Sister Abigail, or do we even give a fuck anymore? Probably not. I mean, I don't know. This one's definitely going to be cinematic. It might be moderately entertaining. I don't mind if it's cinematic, as long as they know to keep it, like as you say, Brother Nate, stay in their lane. The whole thing at at Backlash with the Kabuki
Street Profits and the Viking Raiders.
Yeah, Viking Raiders and all those guys. That would have been great if it wasn't about like 8 minutes too long. It went way too long, and then it kind of lost its humor. This could be fine if you keep it to like 10 minutes, maybe 12 minutes. Anything longer than that, and it'll probably suck. That's just my opinion, Steve. I don't mind a cinematic match here as long as it makes sense, it's kind of have cool visuals, and you keep it in a nice finite number.
What is this card?
It's like the fifth time he said it.
A Wyatt Swamp Fight match, huh? Well, I mean, the obvious
Steve
thing
is morphing into the Titus O'Neil gif from WrestleMania.
Yes.
Yeah. I would rather see a Titus O'Neil championship match, even if Chris Jericho has been burying him. And it's almost too obvious, right? Like Bray wins, and then The Fiend goes against Braun Strowman at SummerSlam, and then we move on to the next person. Why? So yeah, Bray wins. Yeah, the cinematic matches are either a hit or miss. It feels like there really hasn't been like, you know, that was a, you know, a good 3-star. Obviously it's hard to grade them, but it's either been like, wow, that was a stroke of masterpiece. Like that was really, you know, like the Boneyard match, people love that. You know, the Stadium Stampede match from AEW was a lot of fun. Or it's been, you know, the Street Profits match, or even Callahan and Ken Shamrock was a little bit wonky. There seems to be no in between. And I'm glad you're optimistic. I just don't see this being that good.
I'm just being optimistic because I'm hoping that they keep it, you know, in a finite number and not go too out of the lane, Nate.
Mm-hmm.
When is your man, Vincent Kennedy McMahon, ever known the meaning of the word moderation?
That is
Scott
true.
Scola.
That is true. That is true.
Vince's principle is, A1 sauce. A little bit of A1 sauce on the steak tastes great. How about if I use the whole bottle? That's the Vince McMahon,
yes,
strategy in play right there. This match, it'll be fine. I think it'll probably fall somewhere like in the middle of the cinematic matches we've seen. I think Bray wins. I still don't know why Braun is the Universal Champion, but that's a discussion for another day. And I'm just hoping they it's not 25, 30 minutes of these guys in a swamp, which is actually probably going to be, like you said, either the set for the Boneyard match, or they're just going to turn the hoses on out back behind the performance.
Turn the hoses on. Oh God. Kind of like the, Adam Cole Velveteen Dream match where they're just kind of in a parking lot with a ring. And it's like the 1995 Raw intro, you know, just a belt and a bunch of guys running around. So, all right. I mean, it doesn't matter who wins. I'm assuming Bray's going to win because the title's not up, and then maybe they'll do a title match at SummerSlam, something of that nature.
Home field advantage.
Exactly. And I think we're all pretty comfy with that. So, all right. Next up, we have a pair of pretty bitchin' women's matches to discuss. The SmackDown women's title will be on the line. Bayley to defend against Nikki Cross. I like Nikki Cross. I like her. I love crazy batshit. But Bayley is definitely, I have to say, Steve, settled into the role of soccer mom bitch. She's done pretty good. It took her a little while, but I think she settled in pretty well.
Yeah, what this card though? Nate, you'd said it earlier, and I agree. Like Asuka, Bayley, Sasha Banks are really carrying their load, and like Sasha and Bayley have been on like literally every show that they have at this point. And for both of these, yeah, like Asuka, I've said many times, is my favorite person on the roster right now for Raw or SmackDown. Just lights up everything that she's in with her kind of dark sense of humor or silliness, really coming to her own without a crowd there, and been more of an actress than a wrestler at times, which is needed. But the Sasha Bailey story, like having Sasha and Bailey as the champions makes sense for both of them. So I'm just combining the two matches since essentially that's what they're going to do as well. I'm thinking Bailey, and I think that Sasha will beat Asuka at some point, or at some point at this. I'm really thrown off by this card. I'm questioning. I question its existence. Like, why is this happening? There feels like there could be so many different things. Like, if you would have said Apollo Crews versus MVP was going to happen on January 1st this year, at a pay per view. They probably wouldn't have expected COVID either, but I would have expected COVID over Apollo Crews versus MVP on January 1st of this year. And I want these people to get a paycheck. So I think Bailey's going to win. I think Sasha Banks is going to win. and they're just going to kind of prolong this will they or won't they with the two of Bayley and Sasha. But yeah, they deserve to both be the champs because of all that they've done for this entire company over the last 3 months.
I love Asuka, though.
Yep.
I do. But I feel like she's a better chaser. You might be right. Nate, what are your thoughts on the two women's matches?
I agree with Steve. I think it's way too early to kind of break up the team or slow the momentum because they have just been so great. And it's funny, Steve, because I think Bayley in particular was one of the shakier performers when the empty arena shows first started.
Mm-hmm.
But over the past 3 or 4 months, I think her and Sasha have gotten the hang of this thing better than most of the people on the roster. And so, yeah, I wouldn't mess things up until, you know, we get around to SummerSlam. And then you can, you know, maybe have one of them drop it at SummerSlam and then the other one's mad. And so they challenge the other one for their title. And that's how we get to the ultimate end game. But yeah, now it's nothing against Asuka because I love Asuka. But like Bayley and Sasha have been so good. So I think, again, during this silly season, why not go ahead and reward them for their hard work?
Yeah, I think so too. As much as I love Asuka to death, I think Sasha winning and the two of them flaunting all that gold would be pretty cool. I agree with that. They have such good chemistry, Sasha and Bayley together. They really do. I like the buddy cop thing. So we see Sasha winning the title and Bayley retaining her title. We have Dolph Ziggler. Yes. No wonder that's really why Nate keeps going. Steve keeps going. This card. Why is Dolph Ziggler on it?
Yep.
Dolph Ziggler gets yet in his 975th title shot. He will face Drew McIntyre for the WWE title in a something match. Apparently we have no idea what that is. We'll find out Sunday. Regardless, I think Drew wins because he's actually done pretty good under the circumstances. I feel like he's the one that's gotten fucked the most because his WrestleMania moment should have been celebrated with us there in Tampa, 85,000 people. And I think he's done pretty good kind of keeping the mantle going under the circumstances. So I don't think, Nate, there's any question he keeps the belt here.
Again, Steve Willey. Mm-hmm. What is this card?
Now, is the TBD going to be the same TBD that's at Impact?
Ooh.
Yes.
Monty Brown on a pole?
The plot thickens.
EC3 on a pole?
Moose loses the title Saturday and then shows up Sunday as the third guy.
Yes.
It's Tommy Dreamer.
It's Tommy Dreamer. Yes. His mid-card, his mid-crisis, his midlife crisis come true. He has a WWE belt as well.
And see, this again, this is why I'm telling you, Steve Willey, we're going to have more cinematic matches than you would expect.
Oh, no.
I have a feeling, like, somebody, like, maybe it's Scotty's favorite Kevin Dunn. Maybe he's really pushing in the back. Like, we can have this match where it's like the Highlander and Drew gets inspiration from his ancestors and his forefathers. And then we go into this realm where, again, they're just out back behind the Performance Center, but instead of the water, this time they're using a smoke machine. And they're in the Highlands of Scotland. And that's Drew's cinematic match. But yeah, Drew's gonna. Here's the crazy thing, Steve Willey. How crazy is it? You said, you know, you wouldn't think that you'd be talking about MVP and Apollo Crews on January 1st. I never thought that I would be saying, I wish I was getting Heath Slater and Drew McIntyre in a WWE championship match instead of what we're actually getting here.
Yes.
Because Heath Slater cut the best promo of Heath Slater's life.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'd rather see.
Yeah. And Drew McIntyre asked for him to come in, apparently, for that. And, yeah, it would have been fine. But, you know, it's going to be Heath Slater versus Tommy Dreamer with Michael Elgin impaled on a pole.
Impaled. Not just on the pole. Impaled on the pole.
Yeah.
And let's pray Dave Lagana is not with him. All right. So finally, we get to this match. The one everyone's talking about. The biggest thing about this card. Not a tooth for a tooth. Not Judy Bagwell on a forklift. It's Seth Rollins versus Rey Mysterio in an eye for an eye match. And the winner holds the eyeball. Steve Aloysius Willie. This card, man. This card. You think it's gonna be like a candy eyeball, like fucking candy corn? What do you think? Like a gobstopper, like a snozzberry? What do you think? Snozzberries taste like snozzberries.
Like, I feel like Vince was sitting in a boardroom and just had this picture in his head of an eyeball popping out of a head and then worked backward from there. Like, oh, that would be great. And then the writers had to figure out how to get from Rey Mysterio versus Seth Rollins in a regular old match to someone's got to pull an eyeball out and make that story happen. And then as I think of this little scenario in my brain that I've made up, I just think of like what poor bastards that the writers are for WWE and what a horrible job that they have to have in times like this.
Yep. I'm just going to assume that Seth wins because Rey can have like an eyeball hidden in his mask or some shit. Like we said, like Kane with his prosthetic arm in Inferno matches. I mean, unless Seth decides to be like, you know what? I'll play an even playing field and I'll wear a mask or some fucking bullshit. I don't know. Sorry, Steve. I didn't mean to cut you off. I just had.
Oh, no, that was all I had to say. It was, you know, there's no good way that they're going to be able to end this match. No. Like, there's no, like, if it's going to be full camp, but there's nothing they're going to be able to do to save this. They should have just walked it back from the first moment, but that's my only idea is of what happened is that Vince got this image in his head. And once he does, you know, you ain't changing that, because if it was the writers coming up with it, they would have had that veto option.
Mm.
And you don't need to. It's Rey Mysterio and Seth Rollins. You don't need to do this. Like, no. just have the match.
Nope.
It could be a grudge match. Like, you could still, like don't injure his eye. Injure his eye at this card. You know, have, like, a anything goes match. And yeah. Although you can get your Rey Mysterio mask lens at WWE Shop right now.
Oh, Jesus. Here we go.
Yeah, that's not a joke. That is an actual thing that WWE Shop is selling.
What do you think, Nathaniel?
I have a feeling this is going to be another, I don't know if it's going to be fully cinematic or if it'll be the heightened experience like we got with Randy Orton and Edge. I think this might be a heightened experience match where, again, like they didn't need to do this. Like, you've got Dominic right there. You could have told a story about Seth trying to turn Rey's son against him. You know, there's a couple different ways you could have gone without the eye thing. And it's just pointless at this juncture. I think the actual whatever actual wrestling we get should be good, Steve, because I don't think Rey and Seth could have a bad match if they tried on purpose. But all the extra stuff is unnecessary and unneeded. And I have a feeling, like, outside of the women and maybe MVP Apollo, like, this could be one of the worst shows this year. Like, the potential is there.
If you gave me $50 or however much and said, Steve, you have to buy Impact or WWE, Impact easily. Like, yep. Would not give it a second thought.
Yeah. Well, that depends. Do we have to keep Kevin Dunn? Or can I take out his freaking chipmunk teeth?
Kevin Dunn is included with the package.
I'd rather buy New Japan. And I'm buying New Japan. And make evil champion forever. No. All right. So, of course, you can watch this show on the WWE Network on Sunday evening. Of course, here on the Place to Be Wrestling Network, I'm sure Chris Elner and Devin Hales will have an exceptional recap show Monday morning on the play here on the Place to Be Wrestling Network feed. All right, guys, I'm glad we were able to somehow survive that. And before we dive into the B block and go back in time and talk about ballots and great matches and one of the greatest feuds of all time, Brother Nate, we've been selling a ton of stuff on the Patreon today, including booking sheets and Evil's contract and eyeballs and everything else. So tell us what's really the hot stuff on the place on the Kings of Sport Patreon. The players ever place to be Patreon. I don't know. Andy Atherton may find that too on the up and up. Kings of Sport Patreon. Brother Nate, what's going on?
I mean, if you thought that Carl Anderson as the mystery guest was the biggest reveal of the week, no, Scott, you are wrong. Because on the Kings of Sport Patreon right now, you can check out the latest edition of the TDT Talks featuring Steve Willey, where this week Steve and I sat down again with Jennifer Smith and the mystery man himself, Wei Ting of Post Wrestling, for a fun little chat about what's going on in the world and how we're all maintaining sanity and some Hamilton, some hot Hamilton lines were dropped over the course of that program. So TDT Talks is up. There'll probably be a new Kings of Sport this week with the return of the video. I think Marcus got a fresh haircut now. So we'll probably turn the cameras back on. And then the other thing is I've been talking with Chris, Chris from LA, a.k.a. The Professor. And we're going to bring something back the last couple weeks of this month. We're not sure if we're going to talk politics and bring back a 2020 twin or if we're going to do a new episode of the NWA podcast, but one or the other will be up on the Patreon before the end of the month. So check that out, patreon.com/kingsport. $5 gets you in the door, considerably more if you want booking advice. But yeah, check it out. Over 100 hours of audio and video. Politics, we talk comics on there. The entire run of Keep It 100 from Live Audio Wrestling has found a home on the King Sport Patreon. So plenty of stuff, wrestling, sports, pop culture. You can check it all out.
And how many? I mean, how high does it go? What's the platinum Patreon? Does Steve Willey actually come to your house dressed as evil? That'd be amazing. Or Steve, you can do Naito's hairdo. If you do Naito's hairdo, I'll pay $10,000 Patreon. If you have Naito's hair. Anyway, yes, Kings of Sport Patreon. I am a sponsor.
New Japan has Master Wado. We have Master Willie.
There you go.
That's right.
With his own DAV store checkered pants.
Checkered pants. Meanwhile. Over here, because if you're listening to this exceptional program, you obviously know all about the Place to Be Wrestling Network, and we've got tremendous stuff up and down the dial. On the most recent episode of the Place to Be podcast, which is, again, episode 553, as this is 153, JR and I were with Steve Bennett. We wrapped up 1990 with the December 28th, 1990 Madison Square Garden house show, so check that out. We had a lot of fun there. On the newest episode of Highway to the Impact Zone, Logan and Jake with guest Sean Kidd and Lewis Maynard took a look at weekly pay-per-view number 99. The Chaps are back. Yes, Ben Locke, Callum McDougall, Rory McNamara. The newest episode of the Special Relations Pod and a special wedding theme show. Who are we talking about? Listen and you'll find out. On the newest Talk in WCW, Jenny, Greg, and Tim bang the locker room door and talk a little Goldberg in their newest episode. And maybe you have Goldberg matches on your GWCW ballot. And on the NWA Saturday special, last week's episode, myself and the Doctor were joined by Callum McDougall, and we talked about the fourth spot on our NWA Mount Rushmore. We had Harley Race, We had Dusty Rhodes. We had Ric Flair. Who was the fourth? You'll have to listen and find out. We're going to have a great Saturday special episode coming up this weekend. So stay tuned for that Saturday morning. It drops at 9 a.m. And we have a great guest and a great topic. So definitely check that out this weekend. Check out the Police Be Nation Pop feed across the hall. That's Andy Atherton's feed. Great shows. The Year in Pop. Laugh in Theater, The Great Debate, The Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Diamond Conversations, It Was a Thing on TV, Piece of the Action, which I was a guest of recently, Blockbuster Rewind, and so much more. Subscribe today. And then on the other side of the quad, we have a couple of other great feeds. Jennifer Smith's The Jenny Position, Geek and Sassy, Talk and Pop, Freak Out Drive-In, The Brother Sister Rewatch, The Journey Through Infinity, and much, much more. And the new No-So, The North-South Connection, brought to you by my PIC, JT. Chad, Aaron, Wrestling Warzone, No Holds Barred, The Extreme Three-Way, Jeff Learns Wrestling, Ruthlessly Aggressive Podcast, so much more. So check out that great feed over on the across the quad there on the North-South Connection Podcast. In fact, I think Chad today dropped a new episode of Spirit of 06, which he's checking out the entire calendar year of 2006 across North America, all wrestling, TNA, WWE, ROH, Indies. So I think a new episode dropped today, so check that out. We've officially kicked off our 2020 stretch project, the greatest WCW match ever. We'll be talking about that in about 2 seconds. You'll have to New Year's Eve to do your research, so you're inside 6 months. Promote matches, build your list. Conversation and rules can be found at facebook.com/GWCW matches or on the Pro Wrestling Only message board. On our social media pages, and guys, we knew we were going to do this. It is the greatest song from a movie tournament kicked off. Be sure to vote for your favorites every day. Guess what, guys? Let's have a little fun right now, like we always do. Let's see what the posts were today. We're actually recording on Wednesday. Of course, if you're listening to this as it first dropped, it's Friday, so some fresh matchups are there, so check it out. Here are the matchups today, guys. We're ready to have a little fun. I haven't voted yet, so you guys are going to help me vote. In this corner, Journey to the Past from Alia from Anastasia by Alia from Anastasia versus Iron Man by Black Sabbath from Iron Man. Nate?
Not even close, Iron Man.
Yeah. Steve?
Yeah, Iron Man. I don't even know the Anastasia song.
Yeah, me too. Right now it's winning 90-10. Next up, in this corner, Peebo. Celine, Beauty and the Beast versus Yellow Submarine from Yellow Submarine.
Ooh.
I love the Beatles, but I don't know, guys. I gotta love me some Peebo.
Yeah, that's a tough matchup, but I'm going Peebo and Celine there.
Yeah, me too.
I am because it's more also fitting of the soundtrack. That is a soundtrack movie. Beauty and the Beast is a far bigger movie than Yellow Submarine.
I agree with you 100%. Right now, Beauty and the Beast is winning 63-37, so I think they're doing okay. Ooh, interesting. Tonight, in this corner, what's that?
I celebrate my love
for you. In this corner, John Travolta with a little Grease Lightning from Grease versus When Can I See You Again by Owl City from Wreck-It Ralph.
Wow.
For me, this is a no-brainer. If it's a song about getting action in a car, I'm all in on that.
Did Owl City do a cover of that Babyface song, Steve Willie, that I was unaware of?
Well,
I've seen Wreck-It Ralph, but I don't remember that song.
Yeah, that's what I'm looking up right now.
Well, Grease Lightning is winning 82-18, so I don't think we have a problem. Whatever you think it is.
Okay, it's a different song.
Okay.
Grease Lightning.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, definitely Grease Lightning. Next. City, that's a one-hit wonder.
Yeah.
That somehow
next,
parlayed its way to Wreck-It Ralph.
Right. Can't Stop the Feeling. Little Justin Timberlake. Can't Stop the Feeling. From Trolls versus Arabian Nights by Will Smith from Aladdin.
Ooh.
This one's an easy one for me. Maybe it's not for you guys, but Can't Stop the Feeling was everywhere.
Yeah, it was.
Especially with kids. Like,
it made it to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, that's how kids know who, like, young kids know who Justin Timberlake is. That's probably the only good thing that came out of Trolls, to be honest.
I'm inclined to go with you, Steve, on this one, but just to throw Will Smith a bone for the tough week he's had, I'll go with Arabian Nights.
Okay, well,
there's a joke in there.
Yeah,
yes, there is.
72 to 28. All right, next. That's How You Know by Amy Adams from Enchanted versus How Do I Live by Trisha Yearwood from Con Air.
Trisha Yearwood. I mean, like, that was a legitimate song that dominated the charts. Like, wasn't there two versions at the same time of that song, Steve?
I think so.
It was like a Trisha Yearwood version and a Dolly Parton version, maybe?
Yeah, I'm stumped either of these songs. I know the Trisha Yearwood song. I wouldn't associate with Con Air in the least. So I love Amy Adams, but... I'll go with the
no, it wasn't it wasn't Dolly Parton. It was she was like the young hotness, the up and coming country girl.
Leanne Rimes.
Yep.
Yeah,
Trisha.
Yep.
How Do I Live?
Yeah.
Oh, it's the same song.
Trisha Yearwood did it. Yep.
Yeah.
Because they were competing at the time. That's why Steve and I need to go on Super Password. I'm like, who is the hot young country singer? Leanne Rimes.
$25,000 pyramid. And that song, by the way, is winning 67 to 33. So no problems there.
Yeah.
Let's see. All right. Next, we have Prince Ali by Robin Williams from the original Aladdin. Versus Everybody Gotta Learn Sometime by Beck from Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Ooh.
I gotta go.
That's a great movie.
Yeah, it is a good movie.
It's an amazing movie. But Prince Ali is the more known song.
Yes. 79 to 21.
It's a fun song.
This is cake right here. Oh, no, it's not. Son of a bitch. This is right in my wheelhouse, boys. Danger Zone by Kenny Loggins from, of course, Top Gun, which you hear at the beginning of every episode of Highway to the Impact Zone here on the Place to Be Wrestling Network. Or The Living Daylights by Aha from the Bond movie, The Living Daylights.
I think I got to go Danger Zone.
Yeah, I think I got it too. There's better Bond songs. Living Daylights, as good as the song is and as decent as the movie was. Felt like a cheaper version of View to a Kill, which was
Out of the Bond catalog, it is certainly like it's a mid tier Bond song.
Yeah, it's a mid card, but like Danger Zone is fucking Danger Zone. I mean, it's what it is. Right now, it's winning 93-7, so I don't think we'll have to worry about that.
Oh wow!
Go Danger the Zone.
You know, Matt Hardy has Mad Facts, Steve Willie.
Mm-hmm.
This is a Nate fact. Danger Zone, my second favorite Kenny Loggins song of all time.
Next to Footloose?
Oh, Footloose is great. That's probably number three. But number one with a bullet, The House on Pooh Corner.
Yes, I knew you were going to say that.
That song is an underrated Kenny Loggins classic.
Killer. Love it. My favorite's I'm All Right, only because it was in Caddyshack, which hopefully is in this tournament, or Andy Atherton's losing a finger.
Kenny Loggins is so heartfelt, Steve Willie, about Winnie the Pooh getting his face stuck in a jar of honey.
Exactly. It's beautiful. Steve Willie's used the analogy in many a session.
Yes.
all right. Go the Distance by Roger Bart from Hercules.
What is that?
I don't know. Or You Make My Dreams by Hall & Oates from 500 Days of Summer.
Not even close. All you had to do was say Hall & Oates, Scott.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. I mean, that wins everything. It's winning big anyway. Let's see.
Also Zooey Deschanel. Oh
yum. Bailamos by Enrique Iglesias from Wild Wild West, or I Will Survive by Gloria Gaynor from The Replacements. Ooh. I think it's got to be Gloria Gaynor.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Bailamos is a sneaky good song. Like, the rhythm gets in you, Steve Willie. But that The Replacements, I love that movie in general, but that scene. Because Andy Atherton and I had a good chat about the tournament the other day, and Andy was like, you know, for me, it's not just about which song I like better, but how that song relates to the movie. And, like, that is the key scene of The Replacements when the team finally bonds when they're in jail doing the electric slide to I Will Survive.
Yep, it's perfect. I agree 100%. Let's see, any others we could do?
John Favreau in that movie before he hit it big with those Marvel movies.
Yes. He was also in Rudy. People forget that, too.
Swingers.
What?
Swingers.
Oh, Swingers, yeah. That was like his first one, I think. Mm-hmm. Sooner or Later by Madonna from Dick Tracy, or Can't Help Falling in Love by Elvis Presley from Blue Hawaii. I gotta go with Elvis.
Yeah, I voted on this. I trolled because I, you know, again, Dick Tracy, Madonna, it's gonna get stomped. So I figured I'd throw him a pity vote.
Well, your pity vote is one of 15% of, so that tells you what the score is. This one, I'm riding this one as far as I can. The theme from Shaft, fuck, versus Tiny Dancer by Elton from Almost Famous. Mm. Almost Famous is probably one of my 10 favorite movies ever. Mm. And that scene makes me cry because it's so fucking good. And I saw it in the movies twice, and I sang it in the building twice. As much as, and I love Shaft. It's fucking Chef. It's Chef. Hello, children. Hey, Chef. How are my little crackers today? I love fucking Chef. I love Isaac Hayes, and I love Shaft. I got to vote for Tiny Dancer. Sorry.
I got it. It's a good one. I'm going Shaft, though, because if you don't know anything about the plot of Shaft, if you ask anybody on the street, like, what do you know about Shaft? The overriding answer is probably going to be that song.
Right.
So I'm going to go with the theme from Shaft.
Okay. Steve?
You know, Almost Famous getting a run with we might have talked about this last time, the podcast that just dropped with all the stars from the show and Cameron. I almost said Cameron Grimes. this is a wrestling podcast. Yes. Cameron Crowe. And the hard part for me about this tournament is whether you have a song that is known more for the movie, like Danger Zone, Top Gun. Mm-hmm. Like if I think of Tiny Dancer, like more like a great song that just happens to be in a movie, like your Elvis song. Well, I mean the Elvis song obviously in Blue Hawaii, but like Tiny Dancer. If I think of Tiny Dancer, I don't think of Almost Famous. I would think of probably like three or four things before I think about Almost Famous, despite the fact that it is a great movie and I was one of the first DVDs I ever bought, so it's on my shelf. So like for this one, for me, it's Shaft. Not trying to downgrade Tiny Dancer, not trying to downgrade Elton John, not trying to downgrade Almost Famous, all great things, but, you know, Shaft more of a soundtrack song.
I am not downgrading Shaft by any stretch of the imagination, and I love Isaac Hayes, but Almost Famous just makes me cry.
Shaft is so great because it's got like a 3-minute intro before we even get to the vocals.
That is true. That is true. And look, it's not out of the woods. 15 hours left in voting, and Tiny Dancer's up 57-43. So, not out of the woods. Shaft still has a shot. Shaft definitely has a shot still. This will be the last one. There's a bunch of others, but we got to get going. So, Against All Odds, Phil Collins from Against All Odds, the movie. Mm-hmm. Linda Ronstadt's Dreams to Dream from An American Tale, Fievel Goes West. The sequel, not as good as the original, and the Phil Collins song is like iconic for me. That's another 80s staple. So I'm going with Phil.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah.
I mean, the man named a TNA pay-per-view after this. So we got to go with Against All Odds.
Exactly. Exactly.
Fievel Goes West.
Fievel Goes West. That's the next Impact show. Anyway,
can't be any worse than Horror Show.
That is true. Oh, how about Rock On by Michael Damian from Dream a Little Dream? That's such a Steve Willey movie. Anyway, go to the Facebook page and get your votes in for the greatest song from a movie tournament. Be sure to check out placemenation.com. We got great stuff all over the place. Trent smacked on Fox Report this week in WWE by John Crow, who we are going to get on main event down the line, guys, because John Crow's a good guy. Paulie's Perspective, Ben's Unpopular Opinion, Matt's Disney Live Action Journey. And don't forget about veteran columns like Glenn Butler's Wednesday Walk Around the Web. And of course, placemenation.com/Amazon. Buy all your stuff, and we get a little kickback to keep the site running. Okay. This week, of course, it is the GWCW Classic Match Pick segment. I had the shoe, and I decided instead of doing a match or a couple of matches, I wanted to let you guys decide what you wanted to find. I was just giving you a parameter. So I have decided that this week we are going to discuss arguably one of my favorite feuds ever anywhere in pro wrestling in history, and that is the feud between the Nature Boy Ric Flair and the Dragon Ricky Steamboat.
Cage match, the United States title versus the hair of Ricky Steamboat, the Nature Boy Ric Flair, and Ricky Steamboat, no time limit, no disqualification.
It's tonight, the whole wrestling world knows it's tonight. You see that, Steamboat? This is you, my boy. You are the man I created, and you are the boy that I'm going to destroy, bald, ugly, the monk on the eye. No! You see this right here, Steamboat? You see this? You see, I just got out of one of these. Me! They put the great one in it with Jack Mulligan, the king of the cagers. And who walked out with the gold? Me, Ric Flair. I walked out. You understand that? I walked out. And tonight, Steamboat, it's your hair, it's your face, it's your body, it's your life on the line against me and the gold, my gold belt, my gold. Tonight, Steamboat, you hear that? That's your face, boy. You are going to be mine tonight.
Obviously, the criteria, and we could talk about any matches tonight, not just, but I mean, yes, we will be talking about matches that they're eligible for your GWCW ballot, but I also wanted to talk about just matches in general with them because they're both so damn great. Now, officially, quotes, officially, in air quotes, there is probably six matches that one person could conceivably have on their GWCW ballot that these two have had. You have, of course, Boogie Jam 84, which was a 60-minute draw. That match technically counts because it was on the weekend Cindy show later that year. So it was on a TV show. Even though it was not live, it was on a TV show. So the Boogie Jam match, Boogie Jam 84, which check out a past episode of Jenny and the Gems where we talked about that show, and it is on the Hidden Gems section of the WWE network. Then, of course, you have the Big Three from 1989, February Chi-Town Rumble, when Steamboat beat Flair for the world title. My favorite of the three, Clash 6, the 2 out of 3 falls from the Superdome in New Orleans, which 57 delicious minutes of wrestling. And then finally, May, Wrestle War from Nashville when Flair won the title back. Those, of course, that's the 89 trilogy that everyone talks about and generally consider three of the greatest matches of all time. Then there's maybe the two forgotten ones, and those are ones we could talk about tonight, gentlemen. Spring Stampede 1994, where Flair and Steamboat fought to a double pin in 32-19. And then I believe it was the following clash. Let me just get the official.
Wasn't it just a Saturday night?
I thought it was a clash. I'm going to take a look. Let me see. You might be right, Steve, but I'm going to double check.
I think you're both right, because I think it was a clash, but then they played it again for the Saturday Night All-Nighter.
Well, let's see. It wasn't – well, maybe not. It wasn't Clash 26 because Sting and Flair fought Vader and Rude. It wasn't Clash 27 because that was Flair versus Sting in the unification match. And then the next clash was in August, and that was when Hogan and Flair were already wrestling. So
May 15th, 94, the WCW Saturday Night.
Okay.
Thank you. It's been fun being on the show tonight. Peace out.
That'll never happen again. No. So those six matches are probably the most prevalent of Steamboat Flair matches that you will see on anybody's GWCW ballot. I can almost guarantee you that the Clash 6 match, the 2 out of 3 falls from April of 89, the match that took place the same day as WrestleMania 5, is most definitely in my top 3. But I don't know whether I'll decide where in that 3 it will be. And I may not decide until December 30th. Because I have two other matches that could go for me on that list. Chi-Town Rumble is going to be somewhere. Wrestle War will probably be in the top 10. And Chi-Town Rumble will probably be in the top 20. Nate Milton, two questions. Number one, why are these two so fucking good? And B, what do you think is the best match of the bunch?
So
do you have a personal favorite?
Well, here's the thing. I think what makes them so great is that not only are these two of the best to ever do it, but they just fit. Like, wherever one is weak or not as strong, the other one fills that gap. You know, wherever one is excellent in, you know, the other just kind of rides that wave and allows them to take the lead. So with Flair and Steamboat, Ricky was the more athletic one. And so Ricky pushed the pace a lot in the matches. Flair was, you know, more of your grappler. And so when things kind of got a little bit more technical or scientific, as they said back in those days, Steve Willie, Flair kind of took the lead. Rick obviously had this outsized personality and was the guy carrying the bulk of the load on the promos. Whereas Ricky was not great on the mic. You know, he wasn't terrible, but he wasn't great. He was very Bret Hart-ish in a way, even though I think Bret was a better promo than Ricky. But Ricky just had this earnestness that people loved. And he was the consummate babyface, arguably the greatest babyface in the history of wrestling. You know, never turned heel. I mean, not that anybody really knew of. But Ricky Steamboat wasn't, you know, he was somebody you could always depend on. You know, I heard the Mount Rushmore show that you guys did, Scotty. And I would say Ricky Steamboat to me, even though I threw in my write-in vote for Sting, I think Ricky Steamboat definitely would deserve to be on that NWA Mount Rushmore.
Right. Well, you were, I shouted you out on the show. Just want to make it clear. I shouted you out, Nate, for Sting. And we got there was some positive feedback from that. And I mentioned Steamboat. And Steamboat just has that feeling of just consistency.
Yeah.
He could go in a match. I wouldn't say Steamboat's cookie cutter by any stretch, because he's not. But he knew one thing, and you're hitting the nail on the head, Nate. Steamboat was one of those guys that can go in the ring, kind of size up his opponent, and figure out where to fit. I feel like Edge was always like that, too, to a lesser extent. But, yeah, emotionally, those two just worked so well together, you know? And
the one thing, like, I think Steamboat doesn't get a lot of credit for is how he pushed the NWA and early WCW, I guess, to an extent. When you talk about, you know, those 94 matches. Like, what Ricky did was he had this combination between being able to have that more grounded style, but he also pushed it athletically in a way that we hadn't really seen before that, you know, and by 2020 standards, Ricky wasn't this great high flyer, but going back to, you know, 86, 87, 88, 89, even in 94, like you're like, Ricky is out here doing things that a lot of the other guys in that heavyweight division aren't doing.
True. No, I agree 100%. Now, have you watched the Boogie Jam match?
It's been a minute. It's been a minute.
Yeah.
So I didn't watch it this go round. I'll tell you what I did watch this go round. I think the match I've seen the most recently was the Spring Stampede match in '94, which is an underrated classic.
Yes, it is. I agree. 32 minutes too.
Like I remember when I was working at a school TV station down here, and I was just watching, and this was probably a good 15 years ago because it was still on VHS, and I was watching the VHS copy of the Spring Stampede match. And at first, my instructor that I was the teacher's aide for was like, really, this is what we're doing while we're supposed to be grading papers? And I've got Steamboat Flair on in the background, and 20 minutes later, he's like, can you burn me a copy of that match? Like, no problem, man. Because like you're just watching two artists at work. But the matches I did watch, Scotty, the matches I did watch, in addition to the rivalries episode that they on Steamboat and Flair on the network, yep. I checked that out as well. Was the three matches from '89? Because obviously, you know, that's kind of the standard go to answer, but it's the standard go to answer for a reason, Steve Willie. Because these are three of the best wrestling matches that you will ever see, you know, and not to be the gatekeeper of what is or what isn't good in pro wrestling, but to anybody that hasn't seen this or is a new fan, like, I think you owe it to yourself to go back and watch those three matches, because there are similarities in every match, but there's a story being told. It's this family man going up against this playboy who has no respect for the family man. But then by the time we ended at Wrestle War, the family man has lost the title, but he's gained the respect of his adversary.
Yeah, when you have, you know, they could learn from this today. When you have a series of matches, what makes it like this, like a great trilogy, is that you're slowly building, you're telling a story. It's not just the wrestling moves in the ring. The wrestling moves mean something. Like, you know, and these guys, and we'll talk about this, had so many different runs and series of matches together. You know, by the time the 94 matches come around, they had been wrestling together for 17 years in matches. So they could probably do it with their eyes closed.
Yeah.
You know, you have like your old Dusty finish in the one, and then you have your draw, and then you have your final blow off. And as we're saying that, we talked about Okada and Omega earlier on, in a way that's very similar. Like, they had their massive one match, and then like they had the other one that ended up being like 40 minutes, and it was kind of a surprise that it was that short. and so each thing just builds. Like the second match, like Steamboat submitted Flair, which was shocking, and then, you know, they tried to do that in Wrestle War 89 and Flair got out of it that time.
Yep.
So it just builds. And then what the Wrestle War 89 would have is that it finished the trilogy, the Yang, the Expect, and then it moved to the next angle, all in the same move. In the same match, I should say.
And I think, Scotty, what makes like the 89 matches maybe my favorite is that, you know, the matches before that, they're good because it's Steamboat and Flair, but Ricky's not a finished product yet, right?
Right.
Like, he's just, you know, you watch some of those earlier matches and he just kind of a guy that you can tell has potential, but he's like, he doesn't stand out. He's wrestling in black trunks, or, you know, he's he's not somebody that pops off the screen. But then he goes to WWF, you know, has his run there, the great WrestleMania 3 match with Savage, and then he comes back and he's the Dragon. And the character and the family man stuff, when, you know, he's out there with Bonnie and Lil Richie, like, I think that's what cements the rivalry, because now you've got a contrast. You know, before it was just two really good wrestlers. Now you've got a Ricky Steamboat who has got a little bit more flavor to him, a little bit more character to him, a little more flair, dare I say, to his presentation. But he's also really hammering home this, I'm coming out here and I might not win this first match, and I might not win the second match, but I'm going to keep trying, because 89 is the year of the Dragon, and you really get behind the guy, and Flair is just, you know, Flair's Flair. He's the perfect foil for Ricky Steamboat.
Oh, there's no doubt. There's no doubt about it. And they were always, I mean, again, as Steve noted, they've been wrestling since the late 70s, and Steve's got some exceptional examples to tell us about shortly. But the Boogie Jam match might be tough to, I mean, it's really good, but those five matches, and I'm pretty sure, let me go back. What's the, you know what I got to do, Steve Aloysius Willie? I need to check. Where did you say that match was again? The TV match?
Oh, is it the Meadowlands? I don't have that up right now.
The one in 94. The one in 94.
Oh, WCW Saturday Night. It was May 15th was the show date.
All right, let's see. Let me just go to W.
Which is crazy. We're giving that away on a Saturday night.
Mm-hmm. I know, nuts, right? I mean, WCW Saturday Night. Let me see. Wait, I thought we had to. Oh, there it is. WCW Saturday Night. Okay. And what's the date again?
May 15th? 94.
And it is not on the network. The last WCW Saturday Night Show they have on the network is September 18th, 1993. You know what the still shot is, Mr. Nathaniel Milton? Sting and Stevie Ray.
Wow.
But that it's funny because here's why I thought it was a clash match, because I believe if this is the match we're talking about, Steve, it is on the network, but it's under the it's included with the All Nighter.
Okay.
Yes.
And the All Nighter was like mainly clash matches that they were reviewing.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And that was another episode of Jenny and the Gems that you could check out. The four of us watched that. And yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about, Nate, but they were shit-faced by the time they got to the third hour of that show, so I don't even know if they realized what matches were clashes and what weren't. They were a fucking mess on that show. Typical WCW, they had no idea what the fuck they were doing halfway through.
Like, and that match is crazy, because like, I think even Tony is like, why is this match on Saturday night? Because Tony's like, well, it's not really a title match, folks. I guess it's a grudge match, maybe a special attraction.
Yeah, I mean, it's ridiculous. So let's talk about the big four matches then. Well, first off, Steve Willie, before we talk about our ballots, tell everyone the cute little gems, the delicious morsels of history that you found. Now, these matches are not eligible for the GWCW ballot because they took place before 1981, and we had to drop the hammer somewhere in terms of time. So these are not eligible for the GWCW ballot because these took place before 1981. However, they definitely need to be on your list of what matches to watch, period. So, Steve Willie, what did you find for us?
Yeah, I went down the rabbit hole of Google and YouTube and Daily Motion, and there's some, you know, Flair and Steamboat, you know, we know that they came up in kind of Minneapolis a bit together, but they did a lot of Mid-Atlantic together from like 77 to 80. Yeah, 84. Yeah. And then like 77, 78, and 79 is where their matches, singles matches, kind of took off. Yeah. They did some Mid-Atlantic, is it the Mid-Atlantic TV title, or was it the Mid-Atlantic? The Mid-Atlantic TV title was called back then. Or their, the NWA title. Yeah, there's just so many titles that I'm just going back and scrolling as I'm talking here. So, and then they moved up to the U.S. Heavyweight Championship, and that was a lot of the matches that I found were from that late 78, early 79 period, where I did my best, the best I could, to try to figure out dates, matching up YouTube matches with some of like the cage match and wrestling history type sites. So the first one I had was probably from September 3rd, 1978. It was pretty poor quality. It was like 10 minutes long. It's this old 16 millimeter footage from house shows, so it wouldn't have been non-televised as well. And the next one was a match in November of 78. And Steamboat, I don't know how this happened, but Steamboat's like face was all messed up and bruised. So this footage from November 78, it's like 20 minutes long, and the footage is actually really good quality for that time period. And then the final match was from 79, and that was mega cut. It was the same 16 millimeter camera, I'm assuming from the same arena, where it was a U.S. title match, and Andre the Giant was the referee, which was great fun seeing the face Steamboat and the face referee and Flair kind of stooging off of Andre. Like,
how awesome is that, though? You rarely ever saw Andre in a special ref role. That's actually kind of badass right there.
And he's wearing
saw that
brown slacks, these like just really shined up brown loafers, and a red, like, it looked kind of like a polo shirt, only it had a zipper on the top, and he had like the zipper, like, you know, down to his cleavage. And it was just, and then at some point he just got so overheated that he just unzipped the entire shirt or unbuttoned it, whatever it was. And so he had this completely undone shirt, but it was still tucked into his brown slacks. It was quite
fantastic.
Yeah.
But it's Andre, so you don't question it.
Oh, absolutely not. And as much as, at this point, Steamboat was like a bodybuilder.
He was jacked.
He was utterly jacked. And in the second match, he was like, it was like Sting press slamming Flair. You know, just in the middle of the ring, he was doing that. He like twice. He press slammed Flair over his head and chucked him. Just held him and chucked him. It was just, and all the matches were like, the first one was, I'm just looking at my notes. There are a lot of cuts in these matches. Like Steamboat was going off the top rope. He would do this double axe handle. And he went for a second time, and Flair just gave him an uppercut directly into the throat for a DQ. And then the second match, Steamboat's getting murdered, and he does this big comeback, and the crowd is just so, like, just so pro-Steamboat. And lots of women in the crowd. And the women, every time, like, Steamboat would make his comeback, they'd, like, charge the ring and, like, get really excited to the point where, like, the police had to come and push them all back. And then Flair did his stooging where, like, you know, like Steamboat grabbed his tights and pulled his tights down part of the way. And then so because of that, Flair ran away and held on to his title. Because with like with literally his pants around, you know, his quads like running off with police back to the locker room. And then there was some sort of cage match in December that, you know, I had sent you guys the promo for, but I could not find that cage match. That was the December match. So the match before Andre was involved. And at some point there, Steamboat won the U.S. title from Flair. So if you like the old footage, these are completely different type matches than the 89 and the 94 series. They're a lot less scientific. There are more brawls, lot more punching. Steamboat would do Flair, like, you know, the famous Flair knee drop. He would do that 5-6 times a match. And Steamboat would just pretty much do the chops and like, I think they're called like the Mongolian chops. It's like the double chop to the throat where you cross your arms.
Right.
And then some double axe handles. It wasn't like Steamboat throwing his arm drags all over the place. You didn't see any of those. Just different style matches, really playing for the crowd. And probably because it was a house show, but still blood on them. Like in two of the three matches, there was blood. So great stuff. I recommend it.
Ton of shit on this channel too. It's on YouTube. It's Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling Classics.
That's
holy
where I found
shit,
a couple
there
of
stuff
them.
On here. Oh my God, Steve Willey. I just sent it to the guys for the new show that debuts next Wednesday. Yeah, this is killer, guys. Oh my God, check this out on YouTube. Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling Classics. Holy shit! I mean, come on. There's a Ric Flair Swede Hansen match from 1974. I mean, it's the sweeter.
A lot of 70s.
Gene Anderson versus Paul Orndorff. Ooh. Bobo Brazil versus Blackjack Mulligan. This is badass. But, yeah, I mean, there's just, you could go through history and see how intertwined these two guys were in their own history. I mean, it's truly amazing. But a couple of these matches, yeah, this one from 78, holy shit, is he fucking ripped. Flair's pretty fucking big, too.
But now Steamboat's way bigger than him. He looks like a bodybuilder.
Oh, definitely. All right, around the horn before we wrap up. Brother Nathaniel, if you're doing your GWCW ballot, and I know you are, you don't have to say what number it is, but what is your highest Steamboat Flair match?
It's a tough one because I've got all three of the 89s plus Spring Stampede. Like, they're definitely going to be in my top 25. Mm-hmm. It's just a matter of where. But in terms of watching the matches, I think from a technical standpoint, Clash 89 is probably the best match of the, you know, kind of main five that we're looking at.
Right.
But I think in terms of just like emotionally and trying to put myself back in the shoes of where I was as a kid in 89 watching it, like Chi-Town Rumble always have like that top spot in my heart emotionally.
Yeah.
Because the way like Ricky with his kid and all that. Interesting side note, Ric Flair, the Playboy in real life and on screen. Ricky Steamboat, not entirely a monk here though, Steve Willie. Did you know your man Richard Blood is on his fifth wife?
Mm. Is he really?
Ricky Steamboat has been married 5 times. Bonnie was the third wife.
Five times.
Yep. He was married to Bonnie from 1985 to 2003.
Wow. That's crazy.
So, but they'll always have that Chi-Town Rumble match where she brings little Richie to the ring and Ricky almost clips his kid's head on the top rope, yes, trying to get him in the ring. Yes. But yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I think just emotionally, that, like, for sentimental reasons, that's probably my favorite of the bunch.
Okay. All right. Steve Willie. Steve Aloysius Willie. Where are you putting your best Flair Steamboat match?
God. It's got to be one of the 89 ones. I know that house show was really good. Okay. So I would on one hand say the Clash match, but when those matches get so long and you just know it's going to be a time limit, you know, we know where this is going. So I'll probably say just Wrestle War, just because it was the blow off to the feud and built on the other two matches.
Right. Yeah. For me, all three 89s are going to be in my top 20. I already said that the Clash match will be in my top three. I just don't know where it is. It could be number one. It could be number two. It could be number three. Depends what I think about the other two matches. But definitely Chi-Town and Wrestle War will be in the top 20. So check out all those matches. And then, again, Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling Class. As a matter of fact, Steve Willie maybe he'll put these clips on our place to be on our main event Facebook page.
I will try to remember
these,
that.
We could put these other matches, these hidden gems that WWE does not have as a hidden gem.
Mm-hmm.
Gentlemen, a tremendous show, as always. We got a lot of wrestling to watch this weekend, so check out Slammiversary Saturday night if it is free. I don't know if it's on Impact Plus. Well, not free, but if it's on Impact Plus, I doubt it. I don't think Impact does that yet. And, of course, the horror show at Extreme Rules with Rey Mysterio and Seth Rollins, ice cream eyeballs, somewhere at the end of the show. And Braun Strowman getting leeches from swimming in the swamp. Join us in 2 weeks for episode 154. We'll talk more great current wrestling. We'll see what's going on in a couple weeks. Maybe we'll start getting some type of SummerSlam formulation. We'll see. And then we will go back to 2003 for our next installment of our TNA Classic pay-per-view recap. More Russo-rific fun. Yay. We'll all be showered because Vince Russo won't. For Brother Steve, for Brother Nate, I am Brother Scott. You have been in the main event. It's been a long, long main event match, but we went Broadway. Have fun, be safe, love each other, and talk to you in 2 weeks.
Hey, Steve Willie.
Hey, Nate Milton.
You know, a couple episodes ago when we discovered that Dusty Rhodes, the late great American Dream, had dabbled in pornographic movies?
Tried to. Yes, I do remember this.
Well, as I was doing my research on Ricky Steamboat and discovered, you know, his many wives, Ricky Steamboat also got into the adult entertainment industry.
Mm.
Apparently back in like 91, he actually created an animated adult film.
Okay.
Called Steamboat's Willie.